The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
And as we assemble our fourth panel here for the final session of the day, let me mention two things preliminarily. The first is that each of you should have now for this fourth session the survey paperwork consisting of the first page of instructions and then the three pages thereafter. That's printed on the green paper. So if anyone does not have it, please raise your hand, and we'll make sure that someone from the front desk up top brings it to you. The second announcement to make, this really is more in the nature of an announcement, is that, and this is for the people who are watching on the live webcast first and foremost, as of about 45 minutes ago, this survey has been produced in an electronic form on the CGS website, and it will be available in electronic form for quite some time to come in order to gather as much input from the general public consistent with President Obama's call for participatory government, for people to participate as broadly as possible in policy formulation, and to do so in a collaborative way. Both of those words, participatory and collaborative or collaboration, are right in the main presidential directive that was issued last Wednesday. It's entirely a coincidence, of course, that we are the Collaboration on Government Secrecy, but it certainly sets the tone for the process that we're going through today and that the Collaboration on Government Secrecy follows, working with fellow academic and public interest group organizations, people who are interested in this particular field of public policy and law. So those of you who are watching on the website know that you can follow along, so to speak, with those of us here in Washington, where it is still sunshiny, I can report. No gloom and doom, not enough from panel three to make that much of a difference. And you can follow right along with what we're doing on these green pieces of paper right here. Now, with that, let me please quickly introduce our panel members for panel four. The first is Wendell Cochran. Professor Cochran is a longtime leader of the journalism division over at the School of Communication on what we call from here main campus, that is to say the main campus of American University. And he brings no small amount of experience in the whole process of developing survey devices in order to capture information so that it can be tabulated and then presented in a meaningful form. And remember, the goal here is that we're going to be tabulating this information from those of you right on site, also from those of you who participate remotely on the website. And we're going to be tabulating everything together, including what is entered on the website by the end of the day on Tuesday, for then writing a letter to the Obama administration delivered to many different parts of it. I should say, so that everyone knows for sure, that the survey device will stay up on the website longer than that, but we're going to cut it off at least for purposes of what we compile for the White House letter at the end of the day on Tuesday. And next to Professor Cochran is a young lady who actually I call the true Zelig of the FOIA, because Hannah Bergman last year received a joint a master's in journalism degree.
Whatever window let me have.
Whatever Professor Cochran let you have, which she completed, I believe, in only what? 3.1 years. It was very fast. She now works with the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press. She has worked in series for Ron Collins over at the Freedom Forum, First Amendment Center. She has worked at the National Security Archive. And last year, she spent the year as a senior research assistant with the Collaboration on Government Secrecy here at the Washington College of Law. And she also continues to serve as a very part-time consultant for us in helping us to move forward as we develop our website from its current beta version and beyond. And next to her is Solise Pinckney. Solise is the one who understands this process really from the ground up. She is the lady who is responsible for the electronic website mechanism for the survey. I'm not even using the correct words. Celise has far better nomenclature than do I. She is now finishing her fourth semester as a research assistant with the Collaboration on Government Secrecy. She'll be graduating, unfortunately, in May. We're trying to see if we can do anything about that. I kind of missed my boat. I had her in one of my classes last fall, and I suppose if I had the foresight to flunk her, it might have meant she could stay with us longer, but alas, I do believe she got an A in the class. And Celise is the one who has worked very closely with Hannah and with Professor Cochran on this survey vehicle. What we're going to do is sort of walk through the process with you. First, I think Professor Cochran's just going to say a little bit, not much, about the survey mechanism and that process. And then Celise, I think, wants to talk about the electronic version as well, perhaps. You guys know better than I exactly what you've worked out. But we will get to a point where Celise will be available on one side and Hannah will be available on the other side as you work through the survey. And before you get completely through reading the measures here, what I've done is I've taken notes during the program today, and I have an additional 10 items to suggest to you, distilled from what the panelists have said, for your consideration to be put in number 25, or number 26, 27, all the way up to 35. And as soon as these nice folks speak for a little bit, I'll be articulating those for you as well. So, without anything further, let me just turn it over to our panel here, and then we'll shift to our next mode thereafter.
Thank you, Dan. I apologize for my voice. I've got whatever has been floating around, and my ears are about half gone, so anyway. I don't know what it says. I think I'm going to take it as a good thing. I could think I'm just getting old when I get to share a panel with a former student, but I'm just going to say it's a stroke of good luck to have someone as Hannah to stay around town and keep doing the things she's really interested in. I don't want to be too much in false pretenses here in terms of survey research and so forth. My own, I come at FOIA issues from the perspective of a journalist, continue to practice, and from the perspective of an academic, I do maintain a database and records of all the electronic of what the annual reports. I have the database of the annual reports and the performance of government over the last dozen years. And I'll be extending that as we go into to the new administration. In terms of the survey, we realized that making you choose and select the relative importance of these things is a little bit like giving you a choice of chocolate and strawberry ice cream. You may like them both, and it's hard to know which one you would like better at any one particular time. But in order to achieve the goal of getting concrete recommendations to make, we're going to force you to assign a value and then to choose among the things that you like best which order you would put those in. That's actually the process here. But because we know that this is not received wisdom, these things have been put together from a lot of thought, and many of the organizations represented here have contributed to these. It is possible, as Dan said, he's heard ideas to add to this. I know I would add a couple of my own to this list, so that's why you get number 25 or whatever number you want to write down.
26, 27, 28.
et cetera. To add your own, and you can rank that in any order that you want as well. So with that, I suppose what we also thought we might do is if there is, while we're filling this out and going through this process, if there is language that you want to offer for others to hear, or if there are questions that you have about the proposals that are here, you might raise those, and there could be the possibility that an organization that made this recommendation or someone else in the audience might suggest what the meaning is or what the practical application of that would be. I know when I look at them, I see a couple things that I'd actually like to ask about myself. So does that sound like something that will work for us?
Absolutely.
Having said that, I guess the next step is to actually, we're going to let Celise talk a little bit about what happens once we get the surveys done in the process of the electronic thing.
Okay, so just first to start off with, in the event that you don't complete this survey here or you want to tell other people about it, I do want to give you our website so you can make sure to find it online. So that's www.wcl.american.edu/law-and-gov/CGS/.
Okay. Anyone need that repeated?
I thought I had the world's longest URL.
Can I ask, Celeste, do you know one question? They received a printout. I'm going to show my technological ignorance here. They received a printout of the website itself. Mm-hmm. Is that printed on the top of that printout by any chance? Is that how that goes?
It should be.
Terrific. So if you go to the printout that looks like this, right up here, holding it to the website, folks who don't have the printout, of course, in paper form, or the webcast folks, I should say, it's actually at the bottom of the page. I misspoke. So that covers it right there. Great.
Okay. And also, when at the end of this panel and the conference, if you could turn in the surveys to me or Natalia in the back there. If you don't see one of us, the other one will be around somewhere so we can make sure we have everyone's survey.
That's our other senior research assistant with CGS, another third-year student who we wish we could flunk those so she could stay here longer, is Natalia Medina right there in the back row right there with the pink top. Terrific. Let me remind you, too, and I don't want to pre-commit anything Hannah might say as well, because she's going to be available to talk on one side or the other with anyone who has any questions. The way this works as a practical matter is you wind up using the first part of the survey. You can think of the survey as having two parts. The first part is the lengthy part, where you just fill in a number 1 through 10, as the instructions say, next to each of these 24 or 25, et cetera, things. And you can have three of them rated 10, two of them rated 9. You can have nothing rated no more than 5. These are all just your relative judgments, both as to importance and urgency both. Because remember now, the rating here is not just importance only. A lot of people think a lot of things are important, but you heard from our third panel that, you know, you can't just do everything right away. Budgets are tight. And everyone thinks things can be done more quickly than it actually turns out. Certainly the first 6 months of the Clinton administration were a perfect example of that. Those of us who lived through it kind of felt like those 6 months really took a full 6 years because they tried to do so much so fast and found out, for example, in the area of healthcare, that you really couldn't build Rome in a day like that. So you'll be using that first part as a worksheet for the second part. As you go through, let's imagine that when you're done, including any that you add, just coincidentally say only 5 of those receive your top grade, let's say 10. Well, your work is done, essentially, for the second part of the survey, because that means, well, it's almost done. That means you know which 5 you're going to be filling in the second part, the overall priority ranking, and you only have to decide which is first, second, third, fourth, and fifth. Or you could have 4 of them rated 10, and 1 rated 9, and the rest are 8 or below. It works the same sort of way. So after you go through the first part and read them all carefully, then please assign values. Now, I mentioned that I've got about 10 additional ones for you to consider. So I should really tell you those now for you to think about them. And if they strike your fancy, consider making them number 25, 26, 27, 28, et cetera, depending upon how you feel about it. One of them is one that wasn't mentioned today, but I'm going to throw in because it's my personal favorite, and that is having the federal government, as a matter of policy, decide government-wide that all agencies will now start receiving FOIA requests electronically. And I don't mean by fax. I mean electronically by email or a website platform, and have the capability, not always, but at least wherever it makes sense to do so, to respond to FOIA requests electronically. Now, a lot of people thought on this subject that the electronic FOIA amendments of 1996 covered this. And in truth, that amendment to the FOIA covered a lot of things having to do with electronic records. It did not cover this. There is no legal requirement today for agencies to do that. Do a lot of agencies do it? Yes. Do some agencies do it in part and not entirely? Yes. Is it done not so commonly for, say, law enforcement or intelligence agencies or diplomatic agencies? Yes, that's so. The agencies that have the biggest backlogs tend not to be receptive in this way. NASA, which is the agency that put a man on the moon, that was the first agency to take that step. Is it something that, as a practical matter, if you stop and think about it, all agencies are going to do simply as a matter of time? Sooner or later, that's going to happen. And it's only a question of how many months or years it takes. This is my biggest failure, as far as I'm concerned, during my tenure, 25 years heading OIP. I tried very hard to get the Justice Department to stand up on a pilot basis to serve as a model for the rest of the government on doing this. And by the time I retired, I had succeeded. Only one component of the Justice Department, the Bureau of Prisons, was doing this at all. So the question is this something that agencies should now do as a matter of policy, or even should it be part of legislative reform to push them in that direction? Because I guarantee you, and I tell you this from firsthand experience, if agencies are not pushed to do it, it won't be done. It will not become universal, even though it makes sense to do so. Second item comes from both David Sohn primarily from CDT this morning. He said we need to reform the Privacy Act. And there are a lot of arguments that could be made. There's a major access aspect of the Privacy Act. Obviously, it's more than just access. It's also fair information practices. It's not all of a piece. But the FOIA and the Privacy Act, everyone should know, although they were enacted at almost the exact same time, in the fall of 1974 after Nixon resigned, they fit together about like this, which is to say not hand in glove, not really that well at all. So that's something that you might consider, courtesy of the Center for Democracy and Technology. Danielle Bryan from POGO said, hey, should we reconsider Executive Order 12600? This is the area of the FOIA that is sometimes called reverse FOIA, when agencies have to give submitter notice to business submitters of information, a very extensive process. It feeds agency backlogs, and that executive order is maybe up for grabs. You may feel strongly about that, as Danielle does, and therefore want to add it to your list. Danielle also talked about the quality of contractor information. Obviously, this is something that matters very much to a watchdog group like she is, and that's something that might strike you as something to be considered and added as well. Meredith, she made a very strong plea, and I just wrote down two words, less glomerization. That's the concept by which agencies in different situations will refuse to confirm or deny even the existence of records responsive to a request, and she thinks that that's something that's very important. She and I might disagree in some respects about that, but that's not the point. What matters is how it strikes you and what your judgment is. Six, Meredith also talked about frequently requested records, and she has a strong feeling that agencies have not done all that they can do, especially with respect to affirmative disclosure, and I think Linda Kuntz in her remarks this morning alluded to the same, that there is still, after all these years, more work to be done. That may be something that is significant to you in your judgment and a priority as well. Patrice talked about the fact that information had been taken down from government websites. That, in fact, did happen immediately after 9/11 and following in many instances as well. Patrice is of the view that not all information has been restored, even all this time thereafter. So the way she articulated it was restoring information to government websites that has been taken down. That's her perspective there. Both Patrice and David mentioned something that I will confess I do not completely understand. Maybe Hannah and Celeste do. What the heck is Web 2.0? Yeah, that's embarrassing for me to put that question to you, isn't it?
I think that they're getting at the general idea of taking advantage of this memo on transparency and the focus of the Obama administration on technology to really utilize the ability to post the frequently requested documents proactively, as the FOIA amendments required in 1996 that Meredith talked about, and just using the technology that we've seen already on change.gov on the actual White House site.
It typically implies the ability of users of the web to have a conversation with the generators of the information and a conversation among themselves. So I don't know exactly, you know, how she envisioned this in this case, but would there be the ability to have a group discussion of a particular issue, a particular set of records, documents, and how they were used, and to share information about getting information?
Does that mean that we could have all stayed home, even though the sun is shining today, and have this group discussion just in our pajamas in our basement on the computer, not just have the webcast folks look at it from home, but if we used WebPoint 2.0 technology, that would have been possible? That's
yes.
Going too far, isn't it?
No.
Okay. But how about this? Is it something that could conceivably connect to agencies receiving requests electronically, responding to requests electronically, and dealing with requesters in the administrative process? Could those two things be married together?
Right, and I think that goes to the idea of creating a central repository of all FOIA requests and documents, and utilizing Web 2.0 to do that.
Okay. Let me move quickly to 9 and 10. And 10 has two aspects. I'll do number 9 first for two reasons. One is that Gary talked this morning about resources. And basically he made the point that, listen, resources, 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 that's what matters a lot anyway. And frankly, for any initiative, not to mention a FOIA-related initiative such as backlog reduction, it's largely, not entirely, but very, very largely a matter of dollars. And a recommendation that doesn't pay attention to dollars or doesn't focus on dollars is not really complete. So that may be something that you might think stands alone as a distinct category worthy of your attention and inclusion. Finally, the last thing I have noted down is something that Rick talked about, and Rick is still here. I wasn't entirely clear, but I'll tell you what I think he was driving at, and Rick can correct me if I'm not completely correct. You talk about grading agencies, and I note that we also have on the existing list, which again was just selected from all the recommendations and put there in entirely random order, we've got number 6, which talks about penalizing agencies. I think what 6 goes to is penalizing an agency qua agency, depending upon what its employees do in handling certain matters. But I think what Rick was getting at was that we would grade not just agencies but agency employees, sort of along the lines of what Janet Reno did when she was Attorney General. She had an initiative that she began and followed through on within the entire Justice Department, where people were graded on their FOIA compliance. It was part of work performance plans, almost as if you're familiar with the government work performance plan, you would see an EEO element in there as well. Janet Reno did it for justice. We touted that as a model for other agencies. And there are a lot of people who think that because the FOIA needs some teeth in it at the ground level, as much as we all sympathize with employees, that if we have that element in their work plans, that's the best way to give teeth. So I think that's what Rick was getting at. And that could, again, be an additional element for your consideration. So as you work through them, those possibilities at the end and the ones we have here, please come up or even from your seats. We can cover this that way. Raise any question you have about any particular ambiguity or uncertainty or anything like that. And I will just throw out to start the ball rolling on that. You might notice, for example, that in two of the elements, the word ombudsman appears, measure number 2 and number 11. Well, what's quoted there under number 2 is one of the organization's suggestion that there be a broad online ombudsman working for all government services in sort of a global way. That's what that means, whereas the use of the ombudsman in number 11 is exactly what you've heard Gary Stern and others talking about. That's the OGIS element at the archives. So yes, the words are the same, but they really go to two different things. Rick, yes?
I just want to clarify that they're actually one and the same thing.
Pardon me?
They're one and the same.
Does number 2 come from you?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
So
Do you,
one and the same with 11.
Okay.
Except that 11 has already been done.
Technical question. Next to the word online in number two, next to the word ombudsman, you have online. It's not my belief that OGIS would do things online. Do you have a broader belief than that? Okay.
It's our belief for the Sunshine and Government Initiative that the OGIS office should be using online technologies to do the kind of mediations that the statute expects.
Maybe even 2.0.
And online is there ahead of other things because that's important.
Very good. Okay, then why don't we declare with that clarification, and that's the beauty of this process, I would say, that items number 2 and 11 are hereby merged the same. You vote for 2, you vote for 11, it's going to be tabulated the same way.
Well, 11 has already happened, I think.
Yes.
11's already happened, as Rick pointed out. So I think that 2 is really the concept of once the office is operational using the technology.
Well, 11 has only happened, I guess, as of it was announced at lunch today, which shows how timely this program is. As of the time that we created these just a couple of days ago or compiled them, we weren't sure that 11 had happened. And now I guess it would be a matter of the administration just continuing to give good support so it definitely does happen. So it's close to that.
A FOIA ombudsman at NARA?
No. Under the
law. How can you return it back to NARA then?
Oh, that's because Congress created it on the face of the statute 13 months ago, but then through a budget ploy, it was shifted over to the Justice Department. That's the nature
so
of return.
It's never been at NARA.
It's never existed.
It's never been created at NARA, but technically under the law, it has been at NARA for 13 months. It's complicated, I realize, and it's very unusual.
It was, just to be clear, I mean, most of us, it was authorized in the 2007 amendments and placed by Congress in the archives. Before the archives could go through the process of establishing and creating the office and staffing it, the 09 budget process came along and the administration said, well, we never wanted it in the archives in the first place, so we're going to give the money over to Justice.
Which had no legal effect to repeal a statute. The statute is still on the books that says technically it's at NARA. So that's why it's...
So shouldn't that say establish the FOIA ombudsman at NARA?
Yes. There you go. Let's consider 2 and 11 the same, and actually let's consider 11 being merged into 2, with the key aspect of number 2 being the word online, so that what you would be supporting through this is not just an ordinary OGIS being established there, but an OGIS that will definitely do things online, because that requirement of doing things online is not in the statute. If it's done by OGIS, it'll be a matter of administrative discretion, which is something that you could advocate as a matter of policy. If the White House takes that point, that it should be online beyond being merely established, then it will send the word down to whichever poor person answers that Job USA ad and becomes the director of OGIS, that you've got to make sure, no matter what, to work online. How about that? Other questions, please? Concerns, ambiguities, anything like that?
May I ask a question? On number 10, harmonize privacy rules in a pro-privacy direction, including data protection. Mm. The clause or prepositional phrase in a pro-privacy direction, honestly, from my perspective, troubles me because that gives privacy primacy.
Yes. And if I were applying the media perspective, which quite frankly is very much adverse to privacy in general and certainly a pro-privacy characterization, there is no way that I would want to be seen as supportive of that.
But is someone here who did advocate that could explain what they meant by that?
There's somebody, one of the organizations who made recommendations had exactly those words. And I think what they were advocating was in favor of greater privacy, far greater privacy than media groups, as a general rule, prefer. There's no question. Sometimes that's the elephant in the room. Media groups are pro-disclosure advocates. But sometimes the circle comes around full circle, especially with respect to privacy, and there is that strong difference of opinion. If you put Lucy Dalgleish and me in a closet and locked it for 3 hours, only one of us would come out alive, because we disagree violently about the breadth of privacy protection. That's the best way I can put it. And Lucy would probably be the one to come out, by the way, because she's with the media.
I think that's actually a misrepresentation of what we in the press believe. We believe that actually much disclosure is in the public interest, even when, and at times even that would overcome what we would consider more narrow private interests.
That's very well stated. In my opinion, Wendell, that is very well stated, and I appreciate that. Speaking of media folks, what do you think, Ron?
Well, certainly Louis Brandeis, who is as sensitive to the First Amendment as anyone.
Can you come up to the mic, maybe, if you're nearby one, especially?
Just briefly, my sentiments are with you, but I think it should be remained as it is. I mean, there should be an opportunity, those of us who support free speech, for people to have different views than ours. And it may well be that some people, take their cue from Louis Brandeis, who is not only a champion of the First Amendment, but as you know, a champion of privacy. And they may feel that when openness and privacy sits together on the same plane, which they may not, in other words, it may be that the openness concerns are greater than that of privacy, but when they sit on the same plane, that privacy should trump. That's a view that I don't happen to believe in. But I think other people can, and if they want to have a chance to opt out or dissent, or even in this venue, we should, you know, welcome it and allow it. And in other words, we shouldn't stack the deck so everybody agrees with our view. If you don't like it, you give it a zero or what have you and move on.
As a matter of fact, thank you. Ron is not a First Amendment scholar for nothing. Thank you for that scholarly analysis. Let me try to distill what Professor Cochran has said, too. I think what this adds up to is that we ought to have an additional element here, potential element number 10 as an add-on, which would speak of privacy specifically with respect to how the concept of privacy and public interest and the balance has been interpreted under the FOIA, under the Reporters Committee decision, and say that that balance should be altered. We should go back prior to Reporters Committee when there is more weight applied to the public interest to override a privacy interest. And as a matter of fact, it just so happens that that is the key underlying aspect or animating element of the program we're having here on April 28th, at which Professor Cochran will probably debate me or someone else on that exact point, because we will be looking at the Reporters Committee decision now after its 20th anniversary and reconsidering it, considering whether perhaps as a matter of policy or legislative reform, it should be revisited and altered. So if you're a believer, for whatever reason, or along any whatever analytical path, that should be more emphasis on public interest overriding privacy, and that Reporters Committee should be reconsidered, just write it down that way. That's the perfect shorthand. Just say Reporters Committee should be reconsidered. It's a Supreme Court case, 1989, coming up on its 20th anniversary, and we'll know exactly what you mean by that, and we will convey that to the new administration. Any other questions? Yes.
In the interest of good English, if you harmonize something, you have to harmonize it with something else. You don't harmonize it in a direction. What are you harmonizing it with?
Okay.
This is why I wish we knew what group that came from. Do we?
Pardon me?
What group made that recommendation?
I don't want to say I promised them they'd be anonymous, but we have it.
We have no one to blame for the bad grammar.
We are quoting them there. That's why these are in quotes. I truly believe, Mike, and I don't really have much doubt about this, that it was written from the perspective that there is a variation of degree of privacy protection in different places, in different respects throughout the federal government, and that the federal government is inconsistent. So therefore the word harmonize, that the federal government should clean up its act, so to speak, putting it very bluntly, on having a standard level of respect for privacy across the board, harmonize it that way. But when you do that, also at the same time, make sure that you provide for data protection, because everyone worries a lot about data protection breaches. That, I think, is what they were getting at. Remember, this is why we put these in quotes, because they're not always in the most elegant of English. But we want to make sure. Is anyone having any difficulty assigning values to these as you go through? And I don't mean to imply that it's all that difficult, but we really want to take pains to make sure that we get a good product here, because we are, no two ways about it, going to represent this to the new administration as the considered judgment of people who are experts and interested in the subject matter area, who heard the first panel advocate this, and the second panel that, and then the third panel say, whoa, let's slow down and be realistic. We're going to be representing it as such. So that's why you're doing this very carefully and thoughtfully. Really, really matters. And I'll say that as well for those of you looking at this remotely, when you fill this out online, which the paper form of it, Solis, looks like this, right? But an electronic form, it does, by the way, have all of these items on here. And you get to choose those, and you also have ample room electronically, just as you do on paper form, to add additional ones, 25, 26, 27, et cetera. Everyone doing okay on those? How about the second part? Fifth, fourth, third, second, first. Anybody confused about that in any respect? You're able to use the first part as a worksheet and then derive that from there? No problem, no question. We just want to be 100% sure. Anybody interested in having the free coffee and donuts that's out in the hallway? No, there's nothing there. I'm just joking about that as usual. Anyone have any lingering question before we break? And I don't want to give this short shrift, because I know you will not leave until you finish your green sheets. Anybody have any lingering or follow-up question that you'd like to ask at this time? Yes, sir. If you can come up to the mic just for virtue of our webcast listeners.
It's hard to be worth the trip. Can I file this electronically, the blue sheet?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir, absolutely. As a matter of fact, what I will do is, Solis, does this gentleman have a way of putting just a special code in the other category at the end to have it indicate that he is someone who was actually here today?
If you do it online. The blue survey is not ours.
Pardon me?
The blue survey is not ours. That's just the
evaluation. Oh, I'm sorry, the evaluation form. It was a blue sheet, not a green sheet. Oh. I don't have a firm answer for you. They know that upstairs, though. I wouldn't worry that much about it. The nice people from the SECLE organization here. And as a matter of fact, let me take a moment, speaking of that, to thank the special events and continuing legal education folks here at the Washington College of Law, who work so hard and long in making all of this possible. As Natalia and Solis and I tried to put everything together with help from others. And that worked out very well, I would say. And I want to give a final nod, if I may, to our webmaster, Brian Rapp, who I think will be looking at and editing this program. Hello, Brian. We simply could not do what we do without Brian. It's as simple as that. And one of the things we'll be doing as we take our website forward in time, we will be moving away from this, what we call a beta version, thankfully making the type, the print, a lot larger, because I know it's tiny. As my eyes begin to go, I have more and more difficulty seeing it on the screen. And Brian is continuing to play a very big part in that web design and improvement process. So the next time we have this sort of program, maybe not in March or April this year, but probably by September, when we have our International Right to Know Day celebration, and we print out the website, it will be in a much more optically favorable form, more of a reader-friendly form, and not nearly so tiny. Our goal thus far has been to compile as much information as possible thus far, because this is an academic center, an academic research entity, and we've tried to, and we will be continuing to build the website, have as much detail as we possibly can, with the goal being that if you want to check out something regarding the Freedom of Information Act in particular, transparency, secrecy, two sides of the same coin in general, go to the CGS website and bookmark it, because soon enough we're going to have a feature right at the beginning that says last 10 additions to the website. So you'll always be able to go there and say, okay, 8 of them look familiar, but I don't recognize those other 2 at the top. I want to check those out right away. They must be new, and maybe they have something I want to pay some attention to. Yes, sir.
Just quickly, mindful of the last one of the last comments about the democracy of grammar, is it possible that there might be a, quote, committee on style that before this goes off to the White House and other public entities that, review as to grammar, punctuation, and so on, entirely sensitive to the meaning of what was originally written, be done so as to cure any embarrassing potential problems?
You can be guaranteed of that, Rob.
Okay, all right. I wasn't sure, mindful of one of the last comments
well,
about that.
I was saying that we are reflecting what was actually said for this purpose.
Okay.
But when we send a letter to the White House, you can be sure of that.
Okay.
If you look at the press release that we prepared for today, it does have the quoted language per se, because we haven't refined it further. But we wanted to give you the language just as it came in from the organizations that recommend it, and that's what you have. Any other questions or comments or concerns? I don't want to interrupt anyone who's still working.
Item 13.
Yes, sir.
Item 13, I think the subordinate phrase, the end, should be deleted, and the substitution by improved management of the system.
This is 13 that talks about the prospect of a new national security executive order. Okay, this really goes to whether there's going to be a new full executive order or not, and that's the key thing. If you think not just that that should happen, and maybe everyone would agree that it should happen, but that it's important and urgent that it happen, that you want the Obama administration to pay attention to it, then I would say you put a number 10 there on the worksheet, and you make that maybe your first or second choice at the very end.
My view, it may be a minority view, is that the executive order is good. Our management of it and our executive management has been lousy, and we need improved management on that executive order.
Okay, then that would be a new item. You would want to have a separate item being not independent of a new executive order, whether we have one or not. We need better management of whatever executive order we have, old or new. That would be a distinct item, I would think, and you would add that way. And by the way, there's one other thing. There's a place there for you to make comments as well. We will be using that information in a supplemental way in what we send to the White House and the other agencies. So, for example, even if only one person makes the point that Mike Levin made right there, that still could be something that warrants specific mention in the letter as a point of delineation. No matter how what other people think, if it makes sense, we could put it in there. So don't be shy, please, about making any comment whatsoever. But the more information we have, the more basis we have for trying to exercise influence and impact on the administration to do things again sooner rather than later. Okay, everybody, it's a little bit after 4 o'clock. I think it's probably time to wrap up. Thank you very much for your kind attention. And we'll see you at the next CGS program, maybe on March 16th. And I'd like to thank our panel as well here.